Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting across from Kerry Sackville, who's coming to talk about her new book, Out There, A Survival Guide for Dating in Midlife. Welcome, Kerry.
You are sitting across from me.
I am. Yes.
That was accurate.
Yes. So we're here to discuss your book.
Yes, we are.
Now, it was a while ago when you came in to sign your last book. What have you been doing in between, and is it in the book?
Is it in the book? It's all in the book. Nearly all in the book. I have been doing a lot of dating and making a lot of mistakes. I started dating again after my marriage broke down. It was a long marriage, and I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. Dated the wrong men, swiped right on the ones I should have swiped left on. I couldn't work out the bizarro behaviours that I was seeing. And I started writing a lot of columns about my dating life, and I found that the feedback was unbelievable. No matter how bizarre I thought my experience was, no matter how unique it was, there were hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of women who'd been through the exact same thing, and none of us knew what we were doing. So finally, 5 years down the track, I put all of my experiences into a book so that other people can learn from my catastrophes.
So did you continue going on disastrous dates and having poor relationships just for the research for your book?
Yeah,
is this a long-term plan?
I did, yeah. It worked really, really well. Now, as Monica Dickens once said, this is one of my favourite all-time quotes about writing. She was the granddaughter of Charles Dickens, and she wrote a couple of books, one about her experience as a nurse, one about her experience as a cleaner. And she said, the books came out of the experiences. I did not have the experiences to write the book. So it's the same with me. But I have to say my skills have got better over the past few years. My date's more successful. My relationship's less catastrophic. I have a lot of advice for other people on how to negotiate the dating world.
Is it that the dating world has changed so much in how it works? Or is it that when you were initially dating, when you first got married, and that you just forgotten?
It's both. No, it's absolutely both. When you haven't dated in something like 20 years, you completely forget how to go about it, how to conduct yourself on a date, what to look for. I mean, there were so many red flags with some of the men that I met, waving in my face, like vivid scarlet. But I wasn't used to meeting men and having relationships. I've been with the one person for more than 20 years. So I was completely out of practice and kind of had to go back to basics in what to look for and what to be alert for and when to recognise that something is wrong. And then, of course, as you said, the dating scene has changed so much. I mean, when I was dating back, you know, as a young person, and clearly I'm old now because, you know, only old people refer to young persons, there was no internet, so there was no online dating. And the online dating world has changed the face of relationships, I think, permanently. And it's facilitated some wonderful relationships, and you meet people that you would never normally meet, but it's also facilitated some really bad behaviour, like anything online does. Mm. I mean, you and I both know what kind of trolls there are online and how emboldened people are by being behind a screen, but it's the same with online dating. And it's also created a really disposable dating culture. So you can connect with someone that you think you have a lot in common with, and the initial exchange goes really well. Sometimes that progresses to a date. But then possibly 20 years ago, if you'd had that experience, then you guys would have continued to see each other, get to know each other. But now, because there's hundreds of other people online, you may never hear from that person again. And that's really bewildering to people who have found themselves, you know, in this kind of brave new world after not having dated since, you know, the 80s or 90s.
So how many, when you go out there and you're online, because I've been married for, I've been with someone for 14 years,
yeah.
Married for the last five. So I've been out of it too,
yeah.
Completely out of it. I have no
Hang
idea.
On to her.
And I will. Listening to the younger people upstairs when we're working and the things that they're going through, I just look at them going, really? Is that how you conduct yourself?
Yeah.
And the number of people that, because, you know, when I was dating, you, you only knew a few people.
Yeah.
And you went, you joined clubs, or you had associations or friends of friends or family members and that.
Yeah, and studies have shown that back then, yeah, people were far more likely to marry someone who lived down their street or who went to their school because they're the people that you met.
Yeah.
Now
people are crossing continents and,
yes,
and moving to the States and absolutely, moving to Europe to love their life they met online.
Yeah. And that, and yeah, the good part of that is that you can meet people that you never would have had access to before. You can start a relationship with someone who lives in another state or certainly in another suburb that you never would have crossed paths with. But the problem with it is that there's just an there's an embarrassment of choice.
Mm.
And people get a bit high on that, and it also makes it really, really confusing, because when you've got three people to choose from, three single men, well, it's kind of easy to weigh up your choices. But, when there's literally innumerable people online, I mean, look at The Bachelor, right?
Mm.
And how difficult they find making the choice when they have 24 women. Well, this is 24,000 people. And so people kind of lose sight of what they're looking for and how to find it. And you can get to a point, if you're on too many dating sites, you've been doing it for too long, where everyone just sort of blurs into one kind of amorphous man or woman, I suppose. And you really have to know what you're looking for, know what you want, and know what to be alert for, because otherwise it's just too overwhelming.
So what about that anxiety that have I got the right person? Do I have to keep looking over the shoulder to see if there's someone else better behind?
Yeah.
And you can never really settle?
Well, I think that's a real issue for a lot of men.
Mm.
And I have to say, and men often don't like me saying this, but it's in my experience this is true, and in the experience of my male and female friends, so not just the women, it's true. There are far more amazing women of my age group on the dating scene than there are men. And there's reasons for that. I'm not just kind of pulling that from nowhere. Men who leave relationships tend to have someone else lined up.
Mm-hmm.
So a man who is leaving his wife will almost inevitably have another partner already. Men don't leave their partners to be alone. Now, yes, there's exceptions, hashtag not all men, blah, 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 but that is the overwhelming pattern.
Mm.
Whereas women tend to leave their partners because they're unhappy and they feel they'd be better off by themselves. So what you find is that the men on the dating scene have almost inevitably been left, and a lot of them rush straight back onto the dating scene within sometimes days, sometimes hours, sometimes before their relationships have actually broken up. Like, they're almost separated.
Yeah.
And they're messes. Like, they're complete messes. And a lot of them then are, like, desperate to pin down a new partner. So they'll, just want to get a new wife. And they're not really dateable at that point because they need to take time out to be okay. And then those of them who have something going for them, so maybe they're intelligent or they're attractive or they've got money or power, whatever, find themselves with this overwhelming range of possibilities. And a lot of them sort of go, woohoo, and start dating lots and lots of women. And they're the ones who sort of can't make a decision.
Yeah.
For women, it's a bit different. My male friends on the dating scene have said there's just hundreds of amazing women. For women, the really great men are few and far between, and a lot of it has to do with timing. You've got to get them at the right time when they're kind of ready to settle down, but before somebody else has nabbed them, and it's really
hard. So a great man can be a mess for a 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
And you don't want to meet him then. You want to meet him just as he comes out of being a mess.
And if you do meet him then,
yeah,
it's not going to work out, or he won't be able to commit, or he's still in his sort of player phase, and then there'll be a point where, right, he's ready to settle down, and he'll settle down with the person he's with at the time, but, that's maybe too late if you've met him a little bit early.
Yeah.
So I think that's more of a problem, or the antithesis of a problem for men rather than women. And you find women finally, you and I'm the same. You can go out on a number of dates and no, you don't connect, it's not working. Finally, you meet someone great and you think, right, finally, I've met a terrific person and we had a great time, we really connected, vibe was there, and then he's got 10 more dates lined up. So
It does, you know, and you go on the date and you actually go through with it and it's all
well. Oh, no, you can have a terrific date and really connect, but then, you know, yeah, he's got a range of other options. So that's just how it is. And you can't take it personally. You have to be really robust and just try and enjoy yourself and enjoy meeting people. And if you end up with a lifelong partner, fantastic. If not, then try and enjoy the process, because there's a lot of fun to be had.
So this new book out there,
yes,
says Survival Guide. It reminds me of one of those zombie survival guides.
It is a bit of a zombie survival guide.
So it's what are women going to find in it? Are there sort of examples?
Absolutely. So it's got a lot of my personal anecdotes in it, but there's always a reason why I give my anecdotes, why I offer them up. There's always kind of a lesson behind it. So really it takes women through the entire dating process. So what sites to use, how to navigate dating sites, who to swipe on and who to reject, how to decide if you should meet somebody. When you have met someone, how to decide if you want a second date or a third date, what to look out for, so how to recognize red flags and how to manage them. It explains all the behaviours that occur in this particular dating environment that just weren't a thing 20 years ago. So ghosting, for example, when people just disappear. Breadcrumbing, when somebody gives you enough attention, so they might send you enough messages or keep in contact, just enough to keep you interested because they want you hanging around while they explore other options. Negging, which is something that is taught by pickup artists to men, how to very subtly put attractive women down to disarm them so that it makes them more vulnerable. It's all there. So how to manage rejection. So both how to cope with being rejected, because it's an almost inevitable part of the dating experience, and how to reject people in a way that isn't going to have the person get angry or upset or try and argue, because that's an art in itself. How to deal with heartbreak, certainly for me, I came out of a marriage thinking, well, I've been through my heartbreak, I've been through relationship trauma, that's never going to happen again. And then you find yourself dating and you're like a teenager again. It's, oh my God, you're crying in your bedroom because some man has hurt you. And just a lot of really practical advice. But the message that I've conveyed in the whole book and which is so important to me and which I have tried to convey to my friends and to women I speak to is that the most important part of dating is to look after yourself. I can't guarantee that you're going to find the man of your dreams if you read my book, but no one can guarantee that. And the people who tell you they can are lying, of course. There's so much luck involved and timing.
Is it safe to say that this book will help you avoid the losers, the ones that cause you pain?
100%. And what it will do is help you to navigate the dating world with your dignity and your sanity and your sense of humour intact. And that's what I want, and I can guarantee that. And also to have a bit of a laugh, because a lot of it is very funny. I've had some bizarre experiences and I can certainly laugh about them now anyway.
And the other aspect that has really changed in the time that you were married was the prevalence of porn and the way in which sex is displayed on the internet, and then the expectations out there about sex. Did you discover these kind of things where people have these bizarre sort of modes of existence based on this, what they're watching or what they're...
Of course, but I do think that the issue of, dick pics and really the vilest of male behaviour online is much more prevalent for younger men. You find that happening less in my age group, but certainly sexting is alive and well. And yes, women and men in their 40s, 50s, 60s, beyond... a sexting, and there are absolutely different expectations around sex, around intimacy, and there are a lot of sites like Tinder, for example, which is traditionally a hookup site and specifically for younger people, but even in my age group, a lot of people use Tinder to find relationships, but a lot of people use Tinder for hookups. And something that I talk a lot about in the book is how to manage your expectations and how to find out what the other person is looking for. Because I've certainly been on dates where I think it's, we're getting to know each other and we're looking towards whether we're interested in dating each other, and he's just lining me up for sex. And at the end of the night, if he is interested in sex and I'm not, well, that's it. So it saves a lot of time to actually ask up front in the initial messages, what are you looking for? And people are generally pretty open and honest about that. People lie about all sorts of things, their age, their height, their marital status, but they're generally really open and honest about whether they're just looking for hookups or whether they're looking for a relationship. So you really need to find that out early on.
It always surprised me, because, I mean, I've never really dated with the online experience, but the stories of people who misrepresent themselves online and then want to go on a date.
I mean, oh, it's so astonishing. Stupid. I mean, I actually write about it in the book. There was one man who I went on a date with, and he told me that he was 54, and his dating profile said, I believe it was 5'7 or 5'8. And he walked in the door, and he was like knee-high to a grasshopper. And I'm a tad over 5'3, and he was, I was towering over him. And so he walked in, I sort of laughed, and I said, you're not actually 5'8, are you? And he said, oh, no, you got me, I'm 5'5. I'm thinking, well, you're not 5'5 because you're shorter than me, but I left that there. And so later on I said, oh, so you've fudged your height. Is there anything else you'd like to tell me? And he said, oh, well, funny you should say that. I'm not actually 54. I was like, oh, God, how old are you? I'm thinking 56, 58. He was 61. And at the time I was 46. And that was way too old for me. And it's a waste of my time. It's a waste of his time. And I've never really understood it, because you're going to get caught.
Yeah, it's when you're actually...
You can hide your age maybe for a couple of days, but not indefinitely. And you certainly can't hide your height.
No, you can't hide your...
What's the point?
Yeah,
and I think maybe people think that if they can charm people with the force of their amazing personality, they'll forget the fact that they're, 5'3". But for me, it's not about 5'3". I don't mind short men. I don't like liars.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't get over that. If you start a relationship off with a lie, then you're finished. It's over before it's begun.
So what are the funniest things that happened to you during this period? Because it's a steep learning curve. You come out and you're in there. Have there been some just this moments where you just have to close the door on them and just laugh your ass off?
Oh, God, one that I've talked about a bit is the time I was chatting to this really attractive venture capitalist online, and his spelling and his grammar were really, really bad for a venture capitalist. In fact, they were really bad for like a 7-year-old, and he didn't seem to know anything about venture capitalism. And he was incredibly good looking, like model good looking. And what I've discovered now is that if someone looks like a model, they're probably a model. So I did a reverse image search on his photo, and of course it was a Getty stock image. So I don't know who the hell I was talking to, but he had lifted this Getty image. The same thing happened to me with a Canadian academic. So I'm chatting to a guy, and I can't remember what he said he was, but it turned out he'd lifted the photos from a Canadian website. So I want to actually find that actual Canadian academic, because he was really hot. I've done crazy things. I wrote in the book how it's really important not to drink too much on a first date, because I had a first date with someone who was a perfectly nice man. Just wasn't for me, but I had 2 glasses of wine on an empty stomach. And as I said, I'm not a tall person, and that was enough to kind of tip me over the edge. And he started to look really, really attractive after 2 glasses of Merlot, and I suppose I was making goo-goo eyes at him, and he kissed me, and I kissed him back passionately. I'm thinking, oh, this is wonderful. He's so gorgeous. And then with me, the effects of alcohol wear off pretty quickly. So we got to the end of the night, and I realised that the Merlot had kissed him, that I hadn't. And then apparently the Merlot had made a date with him for, a few days later. But I didn't want the date, so I then had to deal with extricating myself from that situation. Oh, there was the man who turned up to a first date with his son. There were the multitude of men who turned out to be not quite separated. So that's a big one, where they say they're separated, but their idea of separation is that they and their wife are sleeping in separate beds. It's like, that's not actually separated. Yeah. If she doesn't know you're separated, you're not actually separated.
There's been no case where you've turned up and just walked out, like without.
I've never done that, yeah. But I have had. There was one time in particular when I did excuse myself really early. It was shocking. I got there and the guy was very excitable and he was like, "You're really good looking." He said, "I'm really good looking too." He said, "I'm like at least an 8 out of 10, but you're like a 9. He says, "Can I take a photo of you to send to my friends?" And I said, "You know, that makes me really uncomfortable." He says, "Oh, you're touching your hair." And I think I was like clawing at my scalp in desperation to get away. And I said, yeah. He says, "Oh, you're flirting with me. I've studied body language. If you're touching your hair, it means that you're flirting with me."
Oh, my God.
I'm really not. And I had this system worked out with a friend of mine, excuse me, where she would ring about 20 minutes into a date, or so she'd text me just to check I was all right, and I'd either say, you know, all good or Kodaks, and Kodaks was like, you have to ring straight away. This guy's like an axe murderer. And she always did it, and on this one occasion, she'd left her phone in the car when she'd gone out with her husband, and I didn't get any text. So I start like texting people madly under the table, like help, help, help. No one answered. And in the end, I just had to put on my big girl pants and say, "Look, I'm really sorry, but this isn't working and I'm going to leave." And he's practically chasing me out the door.
Oh,
and
God.
I actually ran to my car, ran.
Horrible.
So yeah, it was, I mean, as I said, now I can laugh about it. At the time, I needed several, you know, sessions of therapy and vodka.
What about the effect of, I mean, you're regularly on TV, you write columns, your face is on the column.
Yeah.
Does that ever get you in trouble?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard. It wasn't something that I anticipated because I was married when I started writing. And I'm certainly not famous, but I'm very easily Googleable.
Yeah.
You literally put my first name into Google with writer and I come up. And it makes it really hard for me dating because, you know, you're trying to get to know each other and I'm talking to someone and all I know about him is that his name is John and, you know, he works in publishing. And I give my, you know, I say my name's Kerry and I'm a writer and that's it. And it happens probably 7-8 times out of 10 that they'll then go and Google me and then they know everything about me and I know nothing about them. So it really puts me on the back foot. But that's only been an issue in, you know, more recently when I started dating. That wasn't such a problem. My public profile has increased, probably because I write so much about dating and people love dating stories, so it's a vicious cycle. I have thought about having like a pseudonym online, like, I don't know, Priscilla or you know, I don't know, Esmeralda or something. We'll see.
I was interested, this book got picked out of my hands on the way down and I noticed that the person who took it was sitting on one of our beanbags.
Oh,
reading it because she's in the exact same spot. She's just come out of a relationship. She's grabbing it. She's just devouring it.
Yeah.
Are you, are you happy to be the person that people are going to go to and become like the agony aunt for Australia with this sort of thing?
I am because I wrote the book that I wish I'd had access to. And I actually feel really glad that I can help other people with what I've been through. It was really scary, it was really overwhelming, and there weren't any resources. There was a lot written about dating for younger people, but it's completely different dating in midlife, dating when you've got children, dating when you've got an ex, dating other people who have their own baggage and exes and children and so on. Navigating the dating scene, you know, online dating as a person in their 40s as opposed to being a person in their 20s. And I really love the fact that the writing I've done on the subject and this book is helping people. And I keep getting contacted constantly by people saying, "Thank you so much. Like, this is just exactly what I need." And women buying the book for their single friends. And also I've got stuff in there that I don't know has been talked about a lot. So, for example, how to manage your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Something that single women find, you know, in your 20s and you're single, everyone's single, and so everyone's in the same boat and they're all giving each other advice. When you're single in your 40s, you find that your married friends are giving you advice and they have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They're talking out of their
eyes. So I'm giving advice. I have no idea.
Yeah, and so they'll say things like, oh, it's a numbers game. You've just got to keep, you know, going at it. It's not a numbers game at all. I'll explain why. Or they'll you know, spout these platitudes about how you'll find someone when you're not looking. Well, yeah, I've had periods where I wasn't looking and I didn't find someone, and lots of people find someone when they are looking. You know, all this stuff. And just the questions that you get asked by your married friends. Like, oh, anyone special on the scene? You know, also, how's the dating going? Oh, I'm living vicariously through your life. And it's actually really wearing. And so I've written about that and how to manage that and how to manage your well-meaning friends when they say things that really irritate you or make you feel bad. So I'm happy to be the go-to person. My inbox is already kind of starting to get full with people's stories, but I love it. I don't get sick of it. I find the whole thing fascinating. I find other people's experience fascinating. And what I find particularly fascinating is just that we all have the same experiences. It's the same stories being repeated over and over and over again, which is really validating. It's validating for me as well as for the people who are reading it. I like to know that I'm not alone in this.
Mm.
Yeah.
Kerry, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
Great pleasure.
And you can get hold of Kerry's book out there at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.